Hello, I'm Anita Gaidra.
And I'm Don McMahon. Welcome to How Did I End Up Here? A Soft Irish Rain production for Highland Radio about people from all over the world who, like us, have made Donegal their home. Today's episode is a little different in that one of our guests, Libby Carton, has always called Donegal home. But she and her American partner, Rick Levert, spent 15 years trying to find the balance between career and lifestyle, which eventually brought them to Donegal.
So you don't want me to tell you that I was just, I came here by accident, and if I could get out of here tomorrow, I would. That's not what you're looking for, I take it.
Okay, yeah, my name is Rick Levert. I'm from the northeast of the States. I moved around quite a bit there. How did I end up here? I can only say through many steps and a lot of different detours.
My name is Libby Carton. I grew up here in Rathmullen in County Donegal. And I came back here because I love it here. Simply, it was a place I really enjoyed growing up and really enjoy living in as an adult. I was really lucky because I was born in Kildare, and when I was 8, we moved here, and it was just the most fantastic place for growing up. We had such freedom here. We had everything that we wanted as children, because we weren't remotely interested in an urban environment, and we had freedom, and we had a pony, and we had our dogs and cats, and a lot of fun on the beach. So I loved it. Our closest beach is the Kinnegar, which of course our brewery is called after. And that was very much our playground growing up. It's a 7-minute walk, and less than that as the crow flies. Kinnegar is my Irish pronunciation isn't excellent, but it's Kinnegar, I think, which is Cunyun is a rabbit, and a Kinnegar is a rabbit warren. So the strip of land along the beach down there, which is it's effectively the sand dunes beside the Kinnegar, that was a big rabbit warren. There aren't that many rabbits there now, and you tend to see hares more than anything, but that's where the name comes from. We look out over farmland towards Lough Swilly and beyond it to Inishowen.
I was born just outside of Boston, a small town called Natick. It's western suburbs of Boston. Eventually went to college and then to university in New York. I did a degree in economics. I think at the time that we met, I was doing my master's at NYU.
In film studies?
In film studies, yeah.
Rick has been a jack of all trades and master of all of them throughout his life. I studied graphic design at college in Dublin and have followed a fairly linear career path, always working as a graphic designer. Until now, where I still work as a graphic designer, but I also run a brewery.
I was living in New York, living and working in New York City. Libby came as a lot of people. Libby came as a J1 student, so she just finished her degree at NCAD. And I think it was probably within a couple of days of Libby arriving in New York, we met at a party.
Exactly a week.
A week.
On the 4th of July. I had intended staying just for the summer. Well, I wanted to stay because I had met Rick, and I ended up staying and working full time. I think about 3 years later, we decided both of us wanted a change. A good friend of ours, who is German and lives in Berlin, and offered us his apartment to rent for a year. I think it was typical, really, of the way that we've made decisions along the way. We just made the most of the opportunity. and moved to Berlin. I again worked the entire time as a graphic designer, and somehow I managed to infect Rick with graphic design, and we ended up opening our own practice with our company, Carton Levert.
We ended up being about 8 years. I think it was almost 9 years there. I don't think we'd really thought very far into the future at all. You know, we were quite happy in the city and quite happy doing what we were doing. I think maybe a couple of years later, it did get to the point where, you know, are we getting to the point where if we're going to continue to kind of develop this business, we have to either commit to Berlin to do it or go someplace, you know, return to either one of our homes. So we made the decision then to kind of, we figured we'd give Ireland a try. We were living in Dublin, we were working in Dublin. We were faced with a situation where we were going to have to move our office and where we were living kind of all in one go. And this is Dublin, say, in the late 90s. And when we started looking at the realities of what we needed to do, finding both a new place to live and new premises for the business. At that point in Dublin, I mean, we were likely going to end up having to live somewhere in the outer suburbs of the city, which is not, you know, is not the lifestyle that we want. You know, we've always said it's either right in the center of an urban environment or it's way outside, but not kind of in between. And we were traveling back and forth a good bit. We were up visiting, you know, not every weekend, but, you know,
once a month,
I'd say we were up here, you know, visiting for the weekend, just getting away from, you know, the bustle of Dublin at the time. And then we started kind of casually looking.
Yeah, I think we wanted to have a place of our own. Having it in Dublin was out of the question. And the next obvious place to have it was Donegal.
Yeah.
About halfway through the build process of the house, we decided we would move here full time. And the house was finished and we moved in 2002.
I think we also just felt that we wanted to get out of Dublin.
Yeah, we did.
It didn't make sense, you know, if we were unsure about Dublin, it didn't make sense to commit ourselves either to a long-term lease for a business or, you know, to buying a place. You know, it just didn't make any sense to us. It was very lucky for us that it was at a point in time where the internet coverage here, the internet services still aren't very good, but they were getting better and better, and it meant that we could actually run an office from here and just basically send data back and forth.
Hey, Margaret.
Hello.
I think by nature we think we are curious. We like trying different things, doing different things. I suppose it's one of the reasons why we moved around quite a bit, and it was just another, you know, it was an interest that just developed into something more.
Well, while we're waiting for Mary, would you like to get your first little sample of beer to get you warmed up?
Oh no, I wouldn't dream.
And then as it developed, we said, well, you know. You know, is this something that we can imagine, you know, devoting some of our time to?
Please, come on in. We're actually brewing at the moment.
And you also do kind of, I suppose you can reach a certain age where, you know, it's probably bad enough that at our age we're starting a new business. You know, it's not something that you should be doing later in life. But starting a new business in a new place, it's probably going to be even more difficult. And, you know, we thought, you know, we never thought about putting it anywhere else. We just naturally seemed that this would be where it is.
I think we had definitely reached the point where we recognised we wanted to change how we were earning our living. If we were going to make it through to the end of our working lives, we needed a bit of a refreshment.
This, and why did you decide to start?
That's the $6 million question, Mally.
We first started brewing, I think we first sold beer in 2011. And Rick probably brewed for the first time about 4 months before that. So he did a tiny little bit.
Like when in the pilot phase, which was really about kind of developing new
brewing was in our kitchen with
developing recipes and developing new styles.
It's like making jam in many ways.
When we finally moved from that to, I suppose, the commercial, you know, production stage. we had four that we were producing. So Lion Burn, Devil's Back, Bone, Scraggy Bay, Rossbuck. So there were already four beers that we opened the brewery with.
It wouldn't do what it was meant to be doing. So we brewed, I'd say we brewed maybe twice in the kitchen. And then quite quickly, I think he decided, in fact, I'd say he probably had it in his head before he ever homebrewed, that he might like to do it as a business. So then we got a little German brew kettle, which I think we used to brew.
But it's in the first instance, it was styles that we were familiar with and enjoyed ourselves. And I suppose it was a question of whether we could come up with a version of that style, which was a little bit different. You know, we could put a little bit of a stamp of our own onto it. And then whether, you know, there was an audience that was going to enjoy that as much as we did. But I think we have done that.
We had it just down in kind of in the studio building. So basically you went in the door and you turned left for graphic design and right for beer. and same thing, like while we were brewing in the little pilot facility there, which was fully approved kind of health board.
We saw design as telling a story. You can't just cut that story out of whole cloth. That story has to be kind of something which is coming from the business or the product or the people behind it. And the design really is just there to communicate that story, you know, in a visual sense. We feel there is a story behind what we're doing.
Yeah, they're all local. Rust Bucket is called after my old dog because he died while we were developing it. His name was Rusty. So when Rusty kicked the bucket, he got a beer named after him. Yeah, Devil's Backbone, which is, it's the continuation of Crowhan. So it's basically, as you drive across the Kerrykeel Road, that's what you see. It's exactly like a Devil's Backbone. Limeburner is called after the Limeburner rock up at the top of the Swilly. It's just off the mouth of the Swilly, and it's a sea pinnacle. So,
and one of the ways that we've tried to pick up on that quite closely, is probably first of all in the naming. Things like Rust Bucket and Devil's Backbone and Yanarati. We don't think, it's not as though the rest of the world needs to know what those names mean. They have to get maybe a sense that there is something evocative there. There's some type of a story being told. You know, for us, we do feel that there's a connection to this place. So they're very, very kind of, or very highly kind of localized names. You know, we didn't feel that it made much sense to kind of call it something like Malinhead. You know, it's a landmark in Donegal, but so what? It still doesn't have much to do with what's going on right here, whereas all these other ones are, as I say, they are so local. And of course, we've also then picked them in a way to match them to, you know, the product a little bit. You know, the Devil's Backbone, well, it's our amber ale, there's a redness to it. You know, it's just a very kind of small bits of linkages, but it's those stories that we feel are a part of the place and a part of what we're doing that we're then kind of interpreting, you know, through the design.
Otway started it as a special, and we made about four or five batches over last summer and then turned it into a regular, so it got that label. But our special label is happening. Our special ball of silver caps, and then they look like that when they're labelled.
So that gives a try.
Let's go upstairs and I show you the malt in its kind of.
The malt is one of the basic raw ingredients that goes into the beer. It's primarily malted barley, but there's some malted wheat and some malted rye in there as well. And then you would have quite a variety of different types of malted barley. So barley which has been prepared in different ways to give us different results when we use it. Okay.
It's lovely and sweet. Oh, yeah. Because it's sugar that we're looking for.
You don't actually put sugar in too?
No. It's all coming from the grain. And in the Middle Ages, people drank beer instead of water because it was so much safer. So it was like a regular thing to make. One of the duties of a woman in a household was to make beer, because that you were making beer, so you were making a safe drink for the family. So the very original brewers were actually women. They're called brewsters.
So you'd have a brewer and a brewster.
Yeah. So Rachel, you know, who brews, she's her proper, her correct name would be a brewster.
So when the water's finished boiling, we then send it back into this second
well,
tank.
Well, my name is Rachel Carton. I'm Libby's sister. And my history is with horses. I've worked with horses all my life. And the block where the new packaging area is here, that's where my stables were. This brewery was literally built up against the back wall of the stables. And I took absolutely no part in the brewery whatsoever. Rick, as I say, did his first brew here July 2013. And at that stage, he was on a very steep learning curve. He had the German manufacturer of the brew house had come over to help get the whole thing set up and running, and he also had an American brewing expert who came over to give him a hand and get him started. But it came to September and they were gone, and he had an intern here for the summer and she was leaving, and he was badly stuck for a week for help. So he asked me if I would come in and give him a hand for a week, and I never escaped. I've been here since.
And the whole time as well, when you're filtering the liquid through the grain and sending it into the kettle.
Today was probably the most intensive day we've ever had, because we were starting with this and because the sequence of things. But I think we bottled 4,000 litres beer today, which again is like Tom at the end. So he's done the guts of 8,000 bottles.
Delighted
you came.
I had no idea there's so much that's involved.
Yeah.
I didn't realise it was just hard work.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
If I'm here and I'm near the water and near the hills, I can't go to the cinema that easily in the evening. I can't do these things that we used to do in a city, so we need to do something else. I was lucky that we had friends who had grown up here sailing, and you know, therefore there was a possibility to kind of join them on the water and learn from them, you know, how to sail and progress with it. I spent quite a bit of my spare time has gone into, you know, being on the water. I mean, the majority of it is around Lough Swilly, sailing to the Western Hebrides, or sailing from here down to Dublin for different events. So we would race quite a bit, so we go down to Dublin for different races. Sailing from here either out to the two places like Bunbeg or Anmore, or down to Galway. So there's one trip where we left the island of Iona one morning, and you know, that evening we were here. You know, it's not that far away, really. There is actually a whole different world once you're on the water. When you see even kind of like the coastline from the water, it's as though you're seeing the place for the first time. And it's one of those things that if you could spend a lifetime kind of always this side of the water and not really be aware of that other world that is existing just out there.
Bedway, did you not manage to get anything out of them?
Now, I think Rick has probably mentioned already that for, you know, the first 15 years that he knew me, there was never a horse in sight. But I never really had any interest in riding horses when I was away, because it's as much kind of the interaction with them on the ground and owning them and caring for them that I enjoy. Is like the riding is only part of it. They are an addiction. The only thing that I've never done it, but I can tell from talking to people who do it, the only thing that's like horses is certain, I think, where you're just addicted to it. But I think I've got my addiction under control.
when we moved back up to Donegal stuff in 2002. Just by chance, Mary, my aunt, happened to ring me and say, Libby, would you be interested in breeding from the mare? And I said, yes, I'd love to. So just fairly spontaneous decision like that. So it tied in with coming here. But he has a good American name, obviously, with Fenway. He's called after the baseball park that the Boston Red Sox play. He's a real member of the family long term.
You know, if we were starting, if somebody said, okay, establish the, you know, go ahead and set up the business in the most functional way or the most practical way or, you know, the most, you know, cost-efficient way, you know, it would be in an industrial estate near a highway somewhere. There's no doubt about that. You know, there is a higher cost of doing business here. It's not less expensive to operate from here. It's more expensive to operate from here. Even if it's one of those kind of windy, blowy, wet, you know, January days, and you're walking up the laneway to the brewery, I still would prefer that than kind of getting in the car and then driving to, you know, the anonymous industrial estate somewhere to, you know, get the day's production up and running. And so that's a compromise that we've made. We've accepted a higher cost of doing business, and we've accepted kind of greater difficulties in doing business. But we're doing that because, for one's own sense of sanity, you'd rather be doing that than, you know, zipping around the M50 from one industrial estate to the other.
I think I've always been very lucky in that I came from a place where I knew I'd always be very happy to go back to. And I've met a lot of people, contemporaries, who end up in a place like New York or Berlin or Dublin and find they don't actually want to stay there as they progress through life, but they have no particular idea of where they would like to go. And I think I was very privileged because I always had a place that I knew I'd be happy to go back to. I suppose it's very simple. This is where we live, and we wanted to do something here, so it makes sense to have the brewery, to have the business here. It always just depends on your starting point, you know, whether your business is the starting point or the rest of your life is the starting point. And the way things came together here, it's the rest of our life that was the starting point.
How Did I End Up Here is a Soft Irish Rain production for Highland Radio. It was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee.